Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mike McCarthy Podcast, head coach of the Green Bay Packers, along with media slap Larry McCarron. Mike, speaking of which, as I'm prone to do, I stopped for a couple beers after work last night, and I was at the bar ordering, and the guy next to me says, "Hey, you know that podcast you guys do?" And this is for real. "You know that podcast you guys do? It is the best thing that's ever been on Packers.com. And he's going on, and he said, "You know, you don't see that side of Mike McCarthy. He's a regular guy. He's like one of us. He is a Green Bay guy. That is terrific stuff." He says, and, you know, and in the press conference, you know, it's so buttoned down. And my question, Mike, is why is the prevailing wisdom among NFL head coaches that it's got to be kind of buttoned down in the normal media settings?
I mean, well, first off, I think you need to know that I was at the bar right before you got there, and I bought that gentleman a couple beers, so he was kind of greased up for that. So don't look at that too much. Obviously, I'm just kidding, but no, to be honest with you, press conferences, obviously, it's important. It's an opportunity to talk to the fans, but we gotta be honest. It's, you know, you have a locker room that you're responsible for, and frankly, I have one thought process every time I walk into a press conference is don't create questions or situations for my football team. So, yes, I think it's natural to sit here and have a, you know, a normal conversation with you, but really the press conference is a job responsibility. It's a job responsibility, controlling the messaging, not giving the opponent information. There's information that comes out through the media all the time. Frankly, as a football team, football operations, we actually put too much information in the media, in my opinion. I talked to our team about it, but we do have a responsibility to our fans. We're publicly owned, so we understand that. So we do want the fans to have an understanding of what's going on, but you can pick up things all the time. I had a real small clip of a TV interview based on a former player saying something on TV, and because of his relationship with the Broncos, that it was information that was validating some of the things that we were thinking. So it was used in a meeting yesterday. So, I mean, that's all part of it. It's not paranoia. It's fact of the matter. So because when you get into these press conferences, you get questions that are framed of, well, they're trying to figure out who the starting lineup is. Well, frankly, it's, you know, if you're talking about who's playing, then well, where are they playing? Now you're in the scheme. I mean, it's just, that's what the game's for. So that's why I behave the way I do in front of the microphone.
Mike, at said bar, while I was having said beer or two, the Miami Dolphin game's on the TV. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, Joe Philbin isn't coaching that team anymore. It's Dan Campbell now. He's the interim coach. And I'm thinking, wow, Joe Philbin, anybody that has watched this stuff, is an excellent football coach. And this league is so tough, he's out of a job. I mean, like, you know, in your profession, it's crazy. Because that man's an excellent coach.
Yes, and they don't come any finer than Joe. I'm coached professionally and personally, so I think we all understand that and have such a great appreciation for Joe and Diane and his family. So he won't be out of work long, that's for sure. It was hard to watch him go through that, but I think it's another example of, you know, structure, program, and you know, it takes more than just one good coach or a couple good players to win in this league. So and that's why, you know, so many times you see people get caught up in you know, how your roster looks in the spring or how your draft looks and so forth and so forth. You know, teams come together in April, and it's a long process going through training camp. And really, first six games of the year, there's still so much more in front of us that we need to do better and grow to. So it's such a challenging process. And I think sometimes if you don't say, you know, you got to have a plan, you have to have a vision, you have to have a program. And I think Joe just got caught in one of those, you know, one of those tough situations. But anybody that's ever worked with Joe or even competed against him, we went down there last year. I mean, Joe Philbin's an outstanding football coach.
Mike, as I was looking ahead to this podcast, I was thinking, Mike's probably in a good mood this week. And I say that because it was a great fundamental week. Monday in pads, lots of fundamentals. Then Thursday, that first 45 minutes of practice, somewhere around there, it's just, if you're into fundamentals, a thing of beauty. All that good old-fashioned football stuff in pads that's so easy to lose if you're not using them. And you guys got to use them this week.
No doubt. And I agree with you. I thought Monday's work was excellent. Actually, Wednesday's work in shells was a good day. And then really the first part of practice was the best part. We had some cleanup things in the team periods, and we had a couple young guys make some mistakes, but we were able to go back and clean that up, and that's kind of how that Thursday practice goes. But, yeah, so far I feel very good about our preparation, the extra time to spend on fundamentals. So, we get to go up there to Denver tomorrow and get a workout in up there, and we'll definitely be ready to go for Sunday night.
Mike, since you said that, what's the point of working out on the road? That's kind of a change from what you've done in the past.
Yeah, number of factors here. I mean, coming off a bye week, you practice Monday, you practice Wednesday, you practice Thursday. So that's kind of a normal full week for our players. I think that the opportunity to turn the page a little earlier, get up there, have a practice up there, we do our research. Actually, our nutritionist, Adam Corzine, he's worked with the Olympic Committee up there in Colorado, I think, on seven, eight years. So he has a ton of experience and really told our team the reality of going up there. And it's not as big as a deal as everybody wants you to think it is. And so just to highlight the things that we need to do throughout the week and obviously on the trip up to Denver. So the ability to go up there and practice in that climate will definitely it gives us a couple of things. It kind of starts the second segment of the week, which you like to do. Anytime you go on a plane ride, it's good to walk or run the plane ride off your legs, and also we start our neurological clock same time every Saturday. So I think it's really helpful, and frankly it gives our players a little longer time to go have a nice meal, walk around. It's a beautiful downtown. I think being on the road is it's an excellent opportunity for group dynamics to grow. I mean, growing up in the old NFL, you never wanted to give people free time on the road because you're scared that they're going to do this. And I think it's the opposite. It's an opportunity for players to spend more time together. And, hey, let's be frank. When you have home games, our players and coaches love away games because our home games are pretty demanding personally. I mean, your family's all here. Everybody and their mother wants to come to Lambeau Field. And, Saturday afternoon, it's great to see everybody, but you get to the hotel, it's like, whew, where when you go on the road, you have that free time to, you'll see the running backs and you see the receivers, you see different groups. They go to dinner every week. And it's just a great opportunity for group dynamics. People can catch their breath, catch a nap, get to bed a little earlier than normal. So it works for us.
Wanted to ask you about one of your players because it dawned on me this week. I don't think Julius Peppers, who's in his 14th season, I don't think he has missed a practice all year. Now, that's almost beyond the scope of imagination. He may be the only guy on the whole team that has not missed a practice. That's kind of amazing, isn't it?
I mean, he's a phenomenal talent, and he's definitely from the old school. I mean, he practices every day, keeps himself in great shape, and really the mentoring that he's done in his time here has been appreciated and impressive. So, I mean, he's definitely a key member to our football team.
Mike, Julius has certainly made his share of splash plays, let's say. But as I've gotten a chance to watch his game, and tell me if you agree or don't agree, is that he could make more of them, but he plays a very disciplined game. His part in the defense, he takes care of. He's not a gambler that way. He'll do his job, and it probably costs him some splash plays because he's a very disciplined player for one of those star-type guys.
Definitely, and it's really also plays to the creativity of our defense. I mean, it's given Dom in the defensive staff more of an opportunity to have some creative defensive calls where Julius and Clay in the rush unit can alternate and take different opportunities and create one-on-one situations to create those plays. But when you are in a more of a gapped, you know, a gapped out defense in a high run of, you know, tendency situation, definitely Julius plays with great discipline.
Since we're in the neighborhood, Mike, you've done a great job of deflecting credit for the way your defense is playing this season. But I think your footprint's all over it. Wow. You know, it's challenging physically and mentally. It's aggressive. I mean, I think your footprint's all over it.
Well, I think it's just, you know, really, it's still Dom's defense. I mean, but you think about it, our staff's been together since 2009. So I've enjoyed being in their meetings. I just try to give them an offensive perspective as we go through the game planning part of it. But it's, you know, also let's be honest. This is a defense that really kind of came together in the second half of the season, and everybody's back. You know, our young rookies have come in and have definitely contributed. But yeah, they're playing with the aggressive wide openness, you know, a little more kind of like we played on offense. And really the vision of the football team is obviously ultimately my responsibility, and the opportunity for the offense and the defense and special teams all to play the same way. I think we're doing a better job of that this year than we have in the past.
Mike, we had a chance. I had a chance to go along with you as you went back to Pittsburgh during the bye week. And who you come from, where you come from, people couldn't be more normal or regular, and that's said in a very complimentary sense, just the salt of the earth. And that's why I'm asking you this question. Okay, Sunday night, you're on a stage that's as big as the regular season gets. National TV, literally millions of people are hanging on everything, every play, everything you say or everything you do. Do you, over time, now you're a regular guy.
You're scaring the hell out of me.
No,
I don't even know if people watch the game.
Do you, over time, okay, you're a regular guy from Pittsburgh. Like, do you over time get immune to those things? You just get used to it and, hey, whatever.
Well, you definitely get, I mean, you get used to it. There's no doubt about it. But biggest challenge for me on game day is, frankly, the hours leading up to the game. Because I purposely keep myself busy. I have a routine that I go through with my call sheet and a video study and so forth, because I don't really want to think about those kind of things. But you know, I'll tell you, every game I've been in, I've always taken that moment during the national anthem to think about, you know, your family and things like that. So it's a special place, you know, a special opportunity to be able to work in the National Football League. I mean, it's a privilege, and it's a privilege I take very seriously, and I'm very thankful for that privilege. And I think you need to take that moment and kind of remember how you got there and why you're there.
Somewhat along those lines, I was listening to Corey Linsley in the locker room yesterday. And for a young fella, he's been on a number of big stages.
Oh, yeah.
You look at Ohio State, mm-hmm. and you look at last year, you guys go all the way to the NFC Championship game. So he's on some big stages. And, you know, so what's the key to handling that from his perspective? He says, we've got a... In so many words, he said, we've got a real good balancer of a relaxed intensity. And he mentioned, it comes from the top. And how do you balance those things, that relaxed intensity?
You know, there's a great book, Don't Sweat the Little Stuff. And I had the great privilege of working with Paul Hackett, Marty Schottenheimer, and so many excellent older coaches I first got in the league, and the attention to detail and the history of not only, you know, what these plays are and how they've been ran, but why, you know, and learning how the game has evolved and the scheme of, you know, this is why you do it, this is the reaction to what's coming next, and building this proactive adjustment mindset for your players so that, hey, this is what we're going to do, but then here's the answers for when the defense reacts a certain way, and so we can keep them aggressive. And And it was such a great learning experience, but it also just, you know, it just makes you thirsty for more. And so you get into this detail by the book and everything's regimented, and it's an easy trap to fall into as a young coach and look at everything that way. So, frankly, it took me time as I moved through the NFL to know what was detailed and I had to knuckle down and have no exceptions to, and what was the small stuff that I didn't need to sweat. And probably Aaron Rodgers would be the perfect person. I think you'd agree with me is, you know, there's things that I don't sweat today that I did the first couple of years. But they were important then, because you're trying to establish a culture and a program. But now that those blocks are in place, you just need to reinforce them. You don't have to, you know, you have to grind them each and every day. So I think the ability to stay, you know, fine-tuned and detailed on what's most important, but that's something that I work at a lot, and it really goes back to the filter that, you and I have had, I don't know how many, 10 to 20 conversations about, is you have to develop a filter. You got to develop filters in your life, personally and professionally, and the filter that I use all the time professionally is things I need to change, things I need to adjust, things I need to emphasize. So each and every day when things happen, they fall in one of those two categories. So if you're doing something good, keep emphasizing it. If something goes wrong, do I need to adjust it? Maybe, or just keep emphasizing it. And it, you know, it's just a physical error versus a mental error and things like that. And then you got to be honest. You know, sometimes you have to make a change. So, and that three-step process has worked well for me.
I don't think we've talked about this in the past, Mike. You've got a players' council. Right?
Correct, yes.
And do good things come out of the players' council? Because they have a certain perspective on things.
Yes, we have a process as far as, when they meet, and our player engagement director, Rob Davis, he works with those guys. And then if it gets to a point where we have to have, you know, a big meeting where I get to go in there. So it's a good thing. I did it in the early years, really didn't get nothing out of it, actually got away from it, but we've done it the last three or four years now, and I think it's more of a reflection of the people in the locker room, because it's important to them. So if it's important to our veteran players, it's important to me, and it's the thing. I'm kind of laughing because, you know, it's okay, you know, here, give your input, you know, feedback and so forth, but when it comes to schedules or how long we practice and this and that, forget about it. I don't even want to hear about it. You know, but those are then everything else. You know, what do you got? And then, you know, Rob will come in and he'll have like seven things, and the first four are about practice and this and that. I'm like, you know, so I just throw those in the garbage. And then I listen to the next three, and they have good ideas. It's good input. I mean, there's always little thing. I mean, playing music during stretch. You know, that was a big deal, man. That was a big change. You know, we're playing music at different segments of our practice for the right reasons, but they would like to have it during stretch, you know, get some going. All right, so that was a big player council change at the beginning of the year. So just little things like that. And there's been some big things out there, and it's really just a reinforcement of, you know, how we run things, make sure the message is being carried to the younger players. And frankly, if does anybody need anything that we don't, you know, we're not aware of, it's just trying to keep a open line of communication. And because it's, you know, you see it happen. I've worked at different organizations. The players, the locker room is the most important room in the organization. And if it ever gets disconnected from the coaches, which then obviously it disconnects from the organization, you're going to have breakdowns in communication, and you know, you're opening yourself up to bad things.
Speaking of the players in the locker room, isn't it interesting the way there are certain guys among a room of generally pretty tough people, that there's certain guys that have that musk that nobody messes with me. Do you see that? I mean, there's these guys. I mean, it doesn't, regardless of position, they don't have to be, but there's certain guys nobody screws with.
Well, you think about it. You have 63 alpha personalities. So, In the chemistry of that is so important. But, you know, that title of don't mess with me is something that's earned. know, through time. So I think it speaks volumes to those individuals. But yeah, I think you have that pretty much in every locker room.
Mike, I don't want to miss a chance to, because we haven't had a podcast since the trip to Pittsburgh, but we it was really cool to see your dad's bar. Mm-hmm. And it is a classic neighborhood working man's bar, still is, and I can envision it back when he owned it. But the one thing I wanted to ask you about, well, number one, they had a pool table. Did you play pool?
Oh, yeah. No, we played a lot of pool. Well, I was actually a pretty good pool player, yeah.
Where did you play? Eight ball for money?
Eight ball, nine ball. I mean, yeah, pretty much eight ball and nine ball.
You put the quarter on the thing and all
put
that?
Yeah, it was a quarter back then, yeah. Then you put you line your quarter up underneath the bumper to, you know, see who's next and so forth.
The other question I have about the bar is, okay, you go out the front door to a landing, and on either side of the landing is steps going down. Now, when you were working there, and I'm thinking to myself, I could see walking out of here on occasion, and those steps are in a precarious place. Did you ever have to, like, clean somebody up off the sidewalk as they stumbled down those steps?
I think that the setup there is definitely a liability issue. I know it was back in the 70s, because, you know, there's been a few people that went straight out the door and didn't have the opportunity to go left or right. You know, they were projectile over top of the bar. So I've seen that happen on a few occasions. But, yeah, what a great place, though. I think the people of Wisconsin would be proud of that place. I mean, it reminds me so much of Wisconsin. You know, we had steel mills. They have paper mills. Or, you know, it's just a blue-collar neighborhood, and, you know, it was a lot different back then, just because what the steel mills were, I mean, they're literally not even a quarter mile away when they were rolling. So, yeah, a lot of great memories there. I mean, a lot of good stories, you know, like my father tells, you know, he'll bring it up every once in a while. Gosh, I wish I would have wrote a book. I said, that book, you could have wrote, you know, it's volumes of books, just the things that happened there. But it was a neat place. You had a lot of characters, a lot of different personalities, and frankly, it was a part of me growing up. I was, you know, one of five kids or children, you know, but I was the only one that ever worked there. So, and like my mother used to tell me all the time, you should never drink or smoke a cigarette after watching what's going on down here. This should be a great lesson for you to learn from. And I said, no, I'm with you, because, like, you know, we used to have to clean the TVs, because my mom was, we were always cleaning something every day, and just to see the nicotine come off the walls and everything. So I had no desire to ever smoke a cigarette. But I told her, I say, Mom, I got to tell you, this is when them people start drinking, they look like they're having a pretty good time. So we were going to have to talk about that one. So, you know, but no, it was a great experience. You know, my mother, my parents are very hardworking people, and, you know, they took a lot of pride in that place when we had it. And it was great to go down. It was great to see it's doing well. And, you know, it's been cleaned up and so forth. So, yeah, that was fun. That was, you know, like I said, I wish we could have spent more time back here. It was such a quick trip. But, yeah, no place like home.
It's where they call Packers head coach Mike McCarthy. They still call him Mikey in
the
bar.
Yeah. I don't know about that. That's Karen. She's known me since I was Mikey, probably about, you know, since I was a toddler. Yeah, she's been working there that long.
Mike, I don't know if it was your dad that told me or when it came time to name it, okay, and the family is talking about all kinds of kind of creative names, and you're like Ellen something or other, and then your dad comes home, and so there's a big discussion about it. It's open to debate, and, you know, everybody has their favorite. And he comes home from when he signs the paper, and what does he name the place, Mike?
No, he didn't think it was funny when I told the story, but I remember, because it was a big deal. Because you know, he was a partner in the bar. You know, first when he was a policeman, he was a silent partner, and then he moved, he was half partner, and then finally when he bought the whole thing, it was like, what are you going to call it? And, you know, the area that the neighborhood's in, it's called the Run, because it used to be the 4 mile Run. Back in, you know, in the early 1920s and 30s, there used to be a farm there. So so that area is called, they used to call it Down the Run. And so my mom was like, well, what about the Run Inn, you know, or or Ellen's place. You know, she throws her name in a hat, and you know, she's running the kitchen and so forth. And he's like, yeah, you know, he's listening to all this. And I'll never forget, because my mom and I were working that day. It was like a Friday morning during the summer. So he went downtown Pittsburgh to change the papers and get the title and so forth. And he come walking in, and you know, you could tell when he was acting like it was no big deal or whatever. And so my mom goes, well, Joe, what'd you name it? I mean, what'd you go with? And he's like, I didn't want to talk about it. She's like, what's wrong? What'd you go with? He's like, I couldn't make up my mind. She goes, well, what'd you name it? Joe McCarthy's Bar and Grill. So, oh God, she, that was hilarious. We go paint the sign and put it on the building, but that was hysterical.
Sure was. Thanks, Mike. Beat the Broncos, okay?
You bet. Thank you, Larry.